I called you a woman throughout the interview. I never disputed the fact that you're a woman. And yet today, I have spent literally 12 hours being viciously abused by the transgender community, egged on by your own tweeting last night that you were somehow very dismayed by the way the interview had gone. Now, I was surprised because you never said anything during the interview to indicate you were remotely dismayed with any of the terminology I was using. At the end of the interview, you were very cordial. We shook hands. We thanked you for the interview. And off you went. And the interview was done 5 days ago. So I ask you, Janet Locke, to explain to me why you didn't say anything during the interview, why you seemed quite happy with it afterwards, why you then felt the need to tweet quite hostile tweets in my direction, which then sparked this furore amongst the transgender community. Because I feel pretty peeved about it. The
internet for love. All right, hey everybody, how you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show, and thanks for tuning in. Tonight we have got a huge packed show for you tonight. Coming up at the half hour, we have Dr. Dana Byer coming in. She is just announced for her run for the Maryland State Senate, and even more interestingly, she is going up against a man who is, ready for this, openly gay. No, I shit you not. Rich Maldaleno, I believe his name is the senator she is going up against. We'll talk to her about that. We're going to talk about what it means for the trans community. We're going to talk about what it means for the trans rights bill that's trying to make its way through the legislature in Maryland as we speak. But before we get to that, which we will be talking about with Dana at the end of the show, I mean at the bottom of the hour, before we get to that, as you heard in our opening, and unless you've been hiding under a rock for the last 2 days, you know that Janet Mock, the well-known community activist, she's been on the show, just released a new book called Redefining Realness. Really, every review I've heard is wonderful. I have not read it yet. I just got it today. I have not yet started it. I am going to probably start it tonight. I read a lot just before I go to bed, so that's going to probably be when I crack the book open for the first time. I'm very excited to read it. She's absolutely wonderful. Those of you who heard her on the show, you know she's a great interview. If you didn't, the show is still up at beckyjuro.podomatic.com. You can listen to it for yourself. And so because I know, because I've done it, that Janet Mock is a great interview, a wonderful interview. One of my, I will even go so far as to say, probably one of my favorite all-time interview guests on this show. The reason why it was a lousy interview, the reason why Piers Morgan conducted a lousy interview and got a negative reaction was because he didn't ask the right questions. Because here's a woman, okay? She's an author, she's got a new book, and she happens to be trans. Now, let's forget all that for just a moment. Let's say that instead of a trans woman with a new book, let's say instead we were talking about a gay man. I would like to know, if Piers Morgan had a gay man who was written a new book, who was promoting that book and comes on this show, would Piers Morgan focus on the fact that this man is gay and ask him questions about gay sex or what it is to be gay? Is that what he would focus on with a gay author? Or would he ask him perhaps about his book? About what's in it, about what caused him to write it, about where the emotions and the feelings and the information and the arguments and all the things that went into creating that piece of media, which he is there to promote, are about. And if that's the case, if Piers Morgan could have a gay man on his show and focus on what he's there to focus on, which is the work of this author, why is it okay to focus, ignore Janet's work when she comes on, and focus only on her trans status? Why is that okay? Why is it okay
to put things on the screen while she's appearing that say things like lived as a boy till 18 and formerly a man and crap like this. I mean, I published a piece today. It's up, and for those of you, you want to check it out, this gives pretty much my full argument, a lot of which I'm about to rehash here, I think. But it's up at the Huffington Post and the Balerico Project, so you can check that out. It's called Where Piers Morgan Went Wrong. And basically, my argument here is that Piers Morgan didn't go wrong by asking Janet to talk about her history and her transition and say, and ask the question, in essence, well, where did you come from? What are you here? You know, who are you? Why did you come from? But see, the problem was Piers Morgan didn't ask the question, who are you? He asked and insisted on asking the question and exploring the question, what are you? In other words, he focused on the fact that Janet is a trans woman, that she became female at some point in her past, biologically female, because as a woman, as a girl, as a woman, as a identified as gender, because I'm trying to separate sex and gender here, okay, that her gender has, as far as I know anyway, and of course, obviously, the only person who could intelligently speak to this issue is Janet herself, but as far as I know, she has always felt female, and as a girl, as a woman. But at some point, she was born biologically male, which is not the same as being a boy or a man, it should be pointed out, okay? It simply meant that she had physical features that are consistent with male anatomy. Not at all the same thing. And you see, this is where people like Piers Morgan run into trouble. Because they all think, well, if you got one of those little things hanging down, it means you're a guy. And if you don't have one, it means you're a girl. And there's no in-between. Well, guess what? There's a shitload of in-between. There are reams of in-between. There are so many layers of in-between that these people can't even begin to comprehend it. And you know what? That's okay. We don't need straight guys and people to understand every particular variation of the transgender and gender diverse experience. We don't. We really don't. What we do need, however, is for them, regardless of anybody's identified gender, to treat us with respect. That if you are a supporter, if you say, I support trans people and trans rights, you can't just say it. You have to do it. You have to put those values into action when they matter. If you're a host of a major mainstream media show like Piers Morgan, then you, Piers Morgan, have to put, if you're truly a supporter of trans people, then you have to put those values into your show. And one of those values is basic human respect. And I don't care who you are. I don't care who you're talking to. I don't care what the lived experience of your guest is. If she is a woman, she does not want to be called a man. Period. Dead stop. Period. Oh, and I'm yelling a little too loudly, so we just backed off the mic a little bit. Okay, so it's a matter of disrespect, you know, and I'll tell you, I kind of feel an empathy with Janet, and I was watching her on this show, and, you know, when you're the one who has been doing, like, what I've been doing for the last 11 years, doing this kind of stuff, and you've been the one who's wanted to sit in that chair, and you've thought about what you would say if you were in that chair, and you try to imagine what it would be like to be asked to be in that chair. When I saw Janet, and I heard these, I don't even know what to call it, ignorances, for lack of a better term, shooting out of Piers Morgan's mouth. You know, I was watching Janet. You know how they had that split screen going? And you watch Janet, and you can see the hurt in her eyes. It twisted my heart like I could not. I knew exactly what she was feeling at that moment. I could. It came through the screen to me because I could see myself there. I could see myself at that table because I have seen myself at that table, not in reality, but in, you know, my dreams and my desires and my hopes. And so I knew she was hurt and I knew she wanted to say something and I could tell she was concerned. It was a big interview. It was her first time on CNN. The people that she had talked to on the air previously were people who were extremely supportive, who she knew from the get-go were on her side. People like Thomas Roberts, who is a true community advocate and friend of this community and of the trans community, okay, extremely supportive. Melissa Harris Perry, same thing, very supportive, very much a friend to this community, very much motivated to present trans people in the media in a positive way. This, as far as I know, now, of course, Janet has, as I'm sure, done a lot of media work that I have not yet caught. But this, as far as I know, was her first mainstream media interview with a host who was not necessarily on her side from the get-go, who's kind of a middle-of-the-road kind of person who, as far as I knew anyway, because I'm not a regular watcher of Piers Morgan, hadn't voiced an opinion one way or the other. You know, and I can understand. You know, this is a woman, she's got a new book out, she's making one of her first public appearances, in fact, I think one of her first public national television appearances promoting her book. She doesn't want to get into conflict with the host, because that's the kind of thing that destroys your career. You have one bad interview, and nobody else wants you. That's it. Goodbye book, goodbye sales, goodbye attention, goodbye everything. One mistake, and then people will be like, well, you know, we've got 400 other stories, who cares? You know what I mean? That we're still dependent on the goodwill of these hosts and these producers who are saying, wow, wouldn't it be cool to have a trans person on to talk about blah, 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 blah. And how, if it's negative, and if the reaction is negative, and people come out and say, oh, she's a this, she's a that, and Piers Morgan comes out and bashes her, which is what he did on that panel that happened after her second episode, after her second appearance. We'll get into that in a minute. But I could understand. She did not want to come into conflict with him. And that's the one thing. And I can understand why she didn't do it. But nevertheless, I wish she had. I wish she had decided, no, I have to speak out. And she was trying to be polite. She was trying to be cordial. She was trying to be a good guest. And Morgan made one fair question and one fair challenge to her that I thought was fair. It was, why didn't you call me out on it on the first interview? I thought she should have. But I also, at the same time, understand why she didn't. She probably saw her career and her book tour and her media coverage that she desperately needs to help establish her as an author and as a media maker and flashing before her eyes. And realized that, you know, if I screw this up, that's it, I'm done. And I could totally, I could see the fear. I could see the hurt. I could see it. I could feel it. It was like, I just looked at that screen. I was watching her the whole time. I mean, forget about Morgan. Blah, blah, blah. But with her eyes, just the hardness. And it ripped me apart. Because I could feel it like it was myself. And maybe that puts me, because I am who I am, because I do what I do, because I've been doing it as long as I have, that maybe I feel a certain level of empathy on that, that maybe average people, even average trans folks, might not feel. But that's how it affected me. I mean, I saw this, and when I, you know, it ripped my heart out. And I knew and I understood. And you see, that's what I think it is. I don't think people like Piers Morgan really understand that when you refer to a trans woman as a man, we hear that and we feel it and we're impacted just as it is when a gay person hears a gay slur or an African American hears the N-word. That's how it hits us. Being called a trans woman, having a man in particular, because let's be honest, okay? You know, you can talk gender diversity and, oh, nobody's better than the other. You know, that's all true. But you know what? The truth is most of the real hurt and cruelty towards trans women comes from men. I don't like to go and attack people by gender, but in this case, it's true. Men can be particularly cruel to trans women in a way that most women are not. They may not like you. They may not appreciate you. They may not want to talk to you. But men don't just like you. They go out of their way to shame you, to demean you, to be cruel to you, to do everything that they can. And I'm not talking every man, of course, that's ridiculous. But we're talking percentages here. And the truth is that most of the harm, most of the violence, most of the cruelty comes from men. And so when a man like Piers Morgan starts calling Janet, because you know what? That formerly nonsense, nobody's reading that. When you call a trans woman a man, formerly or otherwise, it is rude, it is offensive, it is insulting, it is unworthy of polite discourse. And Piers Morgan should not have done it. And whether or not Piers Morgan happens to believe that it's accurate or fair or whatever to call Janet a former man or a former boy or whatever, it doesn't really matter. Because if you truly support trans people, then you have to respect trans people. And the way to show that you are utterly disrespecting a trans woman is to call her a man. You're basically invalidating her identity. And you can argue and play semantics and say, well, you used to be a man. No, that's the point. You, Piers Morgan, do not get to identify gender for us. You don't get to say when we cross the wall. We do. We are the ones who get to define ourselves, not you. If you want to know who we are, Piers Morgan, then ask us. Don't assume it for yourself. And furthermore, whether you think it should be offensive for Janet to take offense to being called a man and a boy is not relevant. What matters is that she was offended. What matters is that the trans women who are paying attention were offended. And if you are really a supporter of trans women and trans rights, Piers Morgan, then you should apologize, promise not to do it again, and learn from the experience. I mean, I'm sorry. But this is unacceptable. And you know what? Here's the other thing. What woman on this planet would be okay with being referred to as a man? On national television, no less. What possible logic could Piers Morgan and his staff have used to somehow come up with the idea that it would be okay and a respectful presentation to refer to this lady in that way by referring to her as a former man. On what planet is that respect? On what planet does that constitute fair and decent treatment? You know, there's a reason why they call people like me at this end of the microphone a host, and the folks who come on to talk to us, guests. Janet Mock was a guest in Pierce Morgan's on-air home, and he treated her boorishly and impolitely and offensively. Now, I will grant you that he probably didn't intend it that way. I don't think he's really that big of an asshole. I really don't. I really don't. But at the same time, even if you don't know better, even if you don't know anything about trans people, you can't tell me that somewhere in the back of your mind, something, somebody or somewhere shouldn't have said, hey, maybe calling a woman a man on national television isn't a very good idea. Nobody apparently thought that way. Well, you know, it's a trans woman, so it must be okay. We can single her out for disrespectful treatment that we would never in a million years consider saying if this was a born woman. Yet, but because it's a trans woman, it's okay to question. And by referring to her as a former man, you are questioning her gender identity. It's just rude, it's offensive, it's bad hosting, and it's wrong. Plain and simple. There is no more to it. All right, it is time for our first break, and we have got, what have we got? Rika, what? Wait a minute, whoa, I gotta read this again. What the heck?
Possibly Japanese.
Rika Aoki de la Cruz.
Oh, maybe not Japanese.
Okay. I tell myself, it's me. We got about 5 minutes. We will be back with Dr. Dana Bio in five.
Sometimes when you've been with someone for a while, you can forget why you're even there. But if you're lucky, one day or one night, you might catch that girl at the corner of your eye, as if from a distance or by accident, and see that person, almost as a stranger, for the first time. And I wonder how many times, how many trips to Arizona each of us has made, what windshield wipers we've changed, the songs we've landed in the hearts of our friends, and how many times we've missed the chance to hear the true stories we speak to the world, and fall in love with who we are, almost as strangers, for the first time.
Hi, everybody. We are back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have got with us newly declared Maryland State Senate candidate, Dana Byer. How you doing, Dana?
Hi, Becky. Good to be back.
Good. I'm glad to have you. I'm so excited about this because, you know, the last time we had you on, of course, we've had you on several times. Last time I had you on, I asked you if you were planning on running for anything. You said, no, you're not doing that. And now, all of a sudden, wow, out of left field, you're running for state senate. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the last time you ran for delegate, which, of course, is a different position, it's more like an assembly member in other states. Isn't that
right?
Isn't that
right. In Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia, assembly persons are called delegates. That harkens back to the colonial era. That's just a unique term. You know, other states have different terms for this. But most legislatures, with the exception of the unicameral one, say in Nebraska, have a House and a Senate, and so I'm just running for the Senate position. We have four-year terms. So for much of those 4 years, you're not running for anything. You're not even thinking about it. You're leading your life and living it as best you can. You only begin to think, and this is not just I, it's anybody, you only begin to think about running maybe 6, 9, maybe 12 months before the election. And, you start seeing who's there, who's leaving, who's retiring, you know, what are the issues, those kinds of things. So it's not as if I ever stopped thinking about it, because I've remained an advocate all these years. It's just that the time has come. The election is on June 24th, and the decision had to be made. And I did my polling and did my analysis and put a team together, and we sat and we thought about it, and this is what popped out. That's all.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, because this is a rather unique race in a way, because I have never heard of this happening before. Maybe you can correct me if it has. But you are actually running for a Senate seat that is held by an openly gay man, Rich Maddaleno. And there are a lot of people. I know he is a co-sponsor of the trans rights bill that's currently making its way through the Maryland legislature yet again. And there are a lot of people. One of the things I was reading as I was researching this week was there are a lot of people who were asking, well, why go after Rich Maddaleno? He's such a good guy. Why not go after one of these people who, isn't on our side? And so I want to ask you, Dana, why this seat and why now?
Well, now because this is the election. It's a transformative moment in Maryland history. We're becoming a progressive state. Ever since the president came out for marriage equality in 2012, in May of 2012, in his interview with Robin Roberts, everything shifted. And we've become much more socially progressive, but the issues that confront us now, particularly in Maryland, but not only in Maryland, are issues of economic justice. Now's the time to deal with that. My opponent is not an economic progressive, and that's why I'm challenging him. The fact that I happen to live in the district with the only openly gay senator in Maryland is a historical and geographical contingency. It's not something I chose. It's not something he chose. I've been living here for 20 years. It would have been easier for me if he had decided to move. I'm sure it would be easier for him if I had decided to move. Neither one of us did. It just so happens to work out that way. And yes, you're right. This has never happened before because a trans person has never run for a Senate seat before. So you put all that together, it's just one of those flukes of history. There's nothing personal in it. It's not as if I'm trying to take out a gay legislator of any sort. It's just who he happens to be. And I think the important point, and people have noticed this, and there was an article by a friend of mine, Peter Rosenstein, who wrote it in The Blade today about this race, is that this is a sign of maturation for the LGBT community. This is happening more frequently where there are multiple gay candidates for seats, sometimes gay candidates challenging gay incumbents. That's a good thing. Now that there's a trans candidate, first of all, having any trans candidate's a good thing. We need to get more. I've been doing this now for 8 years. It's time that there are more, and there have been, good efforts across the country in some places, not very many. We need to encourage more to do it, and I hope my doing this, my running for office, will encourage others that it can be done just the way Amanda Simpson's run in 2004, 10 years ago, encouraged me that it was possible. So the fact, it's just one of those historical flukes, and there's nothing more to be read in it because this campaign is not going to be about that. We are neutralized. Okay. For most people, Becky, and you know this, and we argue about this on listservs and stuff, for most people, trans is just another form of gay. And when you poll, you find people go, well, that's, that sounds fine, and that's okay, and that's gay, and that's fine, and that's okay. So the LGBT issue is neutralized. The voters aren't going to care about that. They don't care about it anyway, and since there's one quote-unquote gay candidate running against another quote-unquote gay candidate, we're going to be able to talk about economic issues, and I'm looking forward to that. The media are looking at the uniqueness of this, and that's what they ran with. When I ran 8 years ago, every single piece of earned media was about my being trans. It had never happened in this state before. It had only happened once in the country before, so that's what everybody grabbed hold of. 4 years ago, when I ran the second time, not a single story mentioned it. The reporters would ask me after we talk about policies and such, do you want me to mention that because you do LGBT advocacy? And I said, no, thank you. That's not important. It's what the Victory Fund trains us, the point to get to, where you are a candidate who happens to be gay. You're the candidate who happens to be trans. It adds to your biography. It enlivens the discussion at times when you're talking about the personal issues in a campaign, but it is not relevant to the race because it doesn't deal with the issues the voters care about. So
But hang on, Dana. Hang on. Yeah? Because there is one thing that there is, which is this is all happening just as the trans rights bill in Maryland just I think a day or two ago had a hearing. So this effort is going on simultaneously. Does that impact the fact that they are literally the legislature is discussing this issue right now as we speak, as you've announced? Does that impact the conversation?
No, not at all. I mean, it's my candidacy has no impact on a single senator in that committee or in the Senate or any delegate in the House. It's a complete irrelevancy. The two are completely separate. What's different this year is that the primary has been moved up. It used to be in September every year. Now it's in June. As a result, there's a lot more pressure during this legislative session to do political stuff. And as a result, if we were still voting in September, I may very well not have announced anything until March or April, long after the bill has either passed or failed. But because the calendar has been compressed, I really have little choice if I'm going to run a campaign that's going to be credible to have announced when I did. My announcement had nothing to do with this bill. I wish this bill had been passed 7 years ago. As you mentioned, it's year after year. This is the eighth year that we're doing it. That has nothing to do with it. There's not a single senator who cares less about this. It just doesn't play out. And I can understand why people who aren't paying attention very much and don't know how Annapolis works might think that's an issue. It's not an issue in the least.
Yeah. No, I was just asking because, yeah, I mean, I'm not a Maryland resident. I'm not, you know, I know what I read in the papers about Maryland politics, but I'm really not by any means an expert or has experience with it. But one of the things that I've kind of been wondering about is how this plays out in terms of, I mean, obviously, as you said, you'll get a certain amount of attention just because you're trans, and a trans candidate running for any state Senate seat anywhere is an interesting story because mainly because it's so rare still at this point. Do you think that is going to give you, I mean, obviously, they didn't talk about it in the last election, but that was also a delegate election. This is a little bit more high profile. Do you think you're going to start getting that kind of media again where, you know, I mean, I've seen a few articles already where they've had advocate runs for
right.
office.
Right, because that was my declaration. The campaign hasn't begun yet. I decided 2 weeks ago, I declared last week, the media picked up on it. I have good relations with the media. They picked up on it. It's an entertaining story. So, yes, they're going to go with it. That's what the headline's going to be. I have no control over that. But that's not what the campaign's going to be about at all. Now, if in May somebody calls me up and says, I want to talk about this, you know, trans senator, you know, race and stuff, I am going to have to deflect that away and say, yes, that's true, but that's not the issues that I'm out knocking on doors about, because I'm not going to talk about it when I'm out campaigning because the voters don't care about it. One of the interesting side effects of the polling that I did was this was the first time I have ever seen in a poll the fact that the voters are more positively disposed to a trans person than to a gay person. It wasn't by much. It was only 3 percentage points. But generally, when we poll on gay rights versus trans rights, trans rights generally polls 10% less, 10 to 15% less. So gay rights may be at 85%, trans rights are at 70%.
But isn't that mainly a function of the fact that, let's be honest, gay people already have full civil rights in Maryland, so people have had more time to get used to the idea?
No. I'm not talking about Maryland. I'm talking about in general. So nationally speaking, we generally poll 15% less. And when we polled on the GI Bill, in the past, about 2-3 years ago, we're at about 60-63% support statewide. Because there is the possibility of a petition to referendum, so that's an important number, and we polled in various communities to get a sense if there's any ethnic difference and such, and there really isn't. So we know that. We've reached a point in this in our state where this isn't a problem because we have protections in covering 47% of the population. We've talked about this in the past. Three counties and one city, Baltimore City, have protections. Most of the trans population lives in those counties and cities. It's the I-95 corridor to a large degree. So most people already have comprehensive protections under county and city law. And they also have their Title VII protections. So most of them are covered, but there's still disparate impact. There are people in Western Maryland, on the Eastern Shore, and Southern Maryland and such, who deserve the right as well as anybody else, and that's why we're fighting for this. So,
okay, let me ask you another quick question, and this is not about necessarily about your run, but also but about this bill, which obviously they're trying to run through again. Now, the last time that this bill was brought up, there was some last-minute political maneuvering where a member of the committee that was to vote on this was yanked at the last minute in order to facilitate some energy bill involving windmills that was a governor's pet project. And basically what it seemed to me as an outsider who, again, is not familiar with the inner workings of Maryland legislature, it seemed like the governor decided he had a pet project, and the leadership said, well, we could throw the trans people under the bus. Let's make sure that the governor's pet project passes here. Is that the way you see it? And do you think that kind of maneuvering is going to be a problem down the road?
Well, no. I'm very impressed that you actually remember that, or you did your homework, because that's what happened last year. But it had nothing to do with, oh, let's throw the trans people under the bus. I just don't think we're that important in general.
That's my point.
There are budgetary issues.
Important enough
there are healthcare issues.
To bother to make sure
issues.
That bill passed is that we're not considered in the Maryland State Legislature as a priority. And so that's why you have a state like Maryland where gays have full civil rights and trans people have, no state protection.
You know, I can't argue with this. The governor cared very much about wind farms. They're very important. We need to go to clean energy that benefits trans people as well as gay people. The Senate president swapped out one member for another. As a result, we were one member short, one progressive member short. And the sponsors were not able to convince one of the three other Democrats to vote for this bill. That's where we are today. We're in the exact same position that we were in last year. Same committee, same senators, same problem. Next year,
do you expect
one of them
result?
Will be gone. Wait a minute. One of them will be gone. One is retiring, and the other two are being challenged. They have serious political challenges. One or both of them may be gone next year. I'm hoping, because I believe Maryland is transforming, that we will have a more progressive Senate anyway, so that even if it doesn't get done this year, I'm very optimistic that, assuming the election goes the way many of the observers expect it to go, we will get it done next year.
Okay,
and
well, that's
I'm hopeful. I'm always optimistic. I wouldn't be doing this work if I weren't optimistic. The fact that this is an election year means that there are other issues in play, and it gets very complicated. The vote hasn't happened. We always try different, incentives, different compromises, different ways of convincing somebody, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. The goal is to get the bill through. And the fact that there's an election coming up gives us a little bit, more leeway. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen because, again, we don't have a final sixth vote that is a good progressive Democrat. Problem last year, same problem this year. We keep trying, we keep talking, we hope for the best, but, you never know.
Yeah, well, of course. Now, I wanted to ask you another thing. If those who were listening to the show at the top know that there was this big altercation on television over the last couple of days between transgender advocate Janet Mock, who has been an emerging, I guess you could call her trans celebrity, and Piers Morgan on CNN. And there's been a lot of controversy there, and part of the controversy and I would like for you to weigh in on this, since you're somebody who's probably, in at least in politics, is probably one of the most prominent trans people there is, really. What seemed to be the biggest problem here was when Piers Morgan started putting things on the screen that referred to her as a former man, as lived as a boy till she was 18, and seemed to be offended when trans women said, you know, hey, we don't like that. Did you follow this at all? And what was your take?
I did, and I think you wrote a very nice essay today on this very issue. It was very comprehensive and very trenchant, and I think you nailed most of the important points. I won't go down them, you know, 1 to 5, but my sense is, I was married to a journalist for 25 years. I know how the business works. I know how TV works because I've been on TV. I think this problem began because the executive producer, and CNN is not exactly, you know, the most pro-equality network around, so you're starting mm-hmm. with that. And I think the executive producer simply made that mistake. You know, Piers Morgan didn't choose the banners, didn't choose the captions. It's sort of like I write a weekly column for the Huffington Post. I get to choose my headline to a degree. My editors may mess around with it a little bit yep. to fit it in and stuff. But it's unusual when a reporter gets to write a headline or gets to caption a photo. Other people do that. You have no control over that. It's the executive producer who's responsible. I remember about a decade ago, I live around the corner from Chris Matthews, who does Hardball. And the first trans story I remember was about a decade, maybe 9 years ago. And the conversation was very supportive. It's very positive. But the B-roll in the background was very negative because it was simply drag queens in gay pride parades. And I got really offended because the message that the video was telling people, even if only subliminally, was very different from the message of the speakers on the program. So I just went around the corner, and I mentioned this to Chris, and he said, oh, let me give you the name of the executive producer. It's not me. I had no control over what went on my show. So I called the executive producer up and mentioned this to him. He said, oh, I had no idea. That's just sort of stock footage, and somebody throws it up there, and we consider that to be appropriate. Now, that was 10 years ago. I don't think that's considered appropriate anymore. But in 2004, when trans people were barely beginning to pass, you know, statewide protections and such, that was considered appropriate. They needed to be made aware of it. Once they were made aware of it, they stopped doing it. I think that's going to be the same thing here. I honor Janet for having the courage to go on national TV. I think she did a superb job. But sure, she had no control over what was being shown on the screen. She didn't know it was happening until she viewed it later. She had no control over the questions that were asked. I presume she didn't sit down with the executive producer to find out what the questions were. I think Janet certainly, had being in the media herself, knows what people are interested in. I've been talking and educating for over a decade. I know that this stuff titillates people. I would have been expecting Piers Morgan's questions in that first interview. They were exactly what I figured mainstream America would still care about because we're just beginning to be known. You know, Laverne has just done Orange is the New Black. We're just getting to the point where more trans people will be speaking for trans people, and Janet made that point very, very well. You need more people like me talking about trans lives because she wanted to focus on her humanity, on her activism. She didn't want to focus on her physicality. Rightfully so. Yeah. I understand that completely. But most people, when they think trans, only care about the physical. And it's going to take time till we get there. That's all. Right. I think this was difficult, but very helpful.
Hmm? Yes. But here's one thing. And this is something, and I know this because I do this all the time when I have guests on my show, and I'm no big shot, but it's the same. She wasn't there. You know, she was there to promote her book. I mean, that's why she was appearing on the show. That's why she was booked on the show, to support her book. And not once during this entire interview did Piers Morgan say, okay, so what's your book about? You know, talk to me about your work. Talk to me about who you are, not what you are. And that's where I think a lot of us had the issue, was he never asked, who you are. Why are you here? Like, never attempted to introduce this new person to his audience and say, here's this book and here's why it's interesting and here's why this person is interesting enough to bring on the show and present to you. You know,
well,
aside
you know,
from,
I
oh,
think
my
Becky,
God,
I think
oh, my
you're
God,
absolutely
oh, my God,
right.
I used to be a boy.
And, but that's not what happens. I've watched enough of these programs where people have written books and they're brought on because of the book, and then the conversation veers very quickly from what's in the book to the bigger context in which the book plays out. And I think Janet knew full well, she handled that first interview beautifully. And as
yes.
was pointed out, and she admitted it, she didn't take issue with the questions. She smiled, she laughed, she responded very positively. She handled those questions beautifully. And she
oh, yes.
didn't complain about them. She didn't say, stop, we've talked about this stuff for 3 minutes. I've got 2 minutes left. I'd like to talk more about something else. I know how intimidating it can be. I'm not surprised she didn't do it. But that's part of a learning curve. And I think Piers Morgan is not Melissa Harris-Perry, as she has said. Piers Morgan isn't Charlie Rose. Janet said, I wish I could sit down over coffee with you. You know, and that's, I need 45 minutes with you, Piers. I need an hour to be able to get you through the usual sensationalist stuff about surgery and hormones and what was it like to have my first boyfriend and all that stuff. And we get through that in 10 or 20 minutes. And then when it's over, then we can talk about the really interesting stuff once you get to know me as a person. Chaz Bono did 2 interviews with David Letterman, I recall. And he sat with him for, I believe, a total of 40 minutes. As a result, people got to see what that trans man really was about. But if the interview had been relegated to only 5 minutes, as the first Piers Morgan interview was, they wouldn't have, because the viewers, at least according to the producers, wanted to hear the other stuff. So our job as trans people who are out in the public is to educate them enough to get them to understand that we're not about genitals, that sex is about, you know, brain sex and not just about genitals. Gender is far more than that. Help them understand the language. You could see in the second interview, which happened last night, that Janet and Piers were speaking past one another. Piers couldn't mm-hmm. understand, yeah, I'm a great ally, I don't understand what the problem is, you people, you know, your people attacked me, you know, I mean, Janet had no control over that stuff, and he's feeling offended because he thinks he's doing a good job, and he could clearly do a much better job, but these are problems I think could be worked out. I think she broke the ice. I think she and Laverne and Carrera in the previous one have helped move this conversation forward. I believe it will continue to get better. There were also complaints about the panel that followed, right? And mm-hmm. well, that Ben Ferguson, he's a real piece
yeah.
of work. But I also believe,
and you can tell that was a stacked deck. I mean, it really
yes, was.
It was, I
a stacked
mean,
deck
when you have
because
eight,
Mark Lamont Hill
was as far right as
Mark Lamont Hill was stuck in the middle, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one against two. And that the woman, Amy, I forget her last name, you know, made that stupid
Holmes.
Remark about setting people straight before him and conflating sexual orientation and gender identity. Janet happens to be a straight woman, you know, so she missed that completely. But again,
yeah.
I don't think that had anything to do with Piers Morgan. I think the producer put that together in order to show that he was fair and balanced, and he wasn't. But I think the Ben Fergusons of the world make us look better. I think those people are crazy. Do you remember when Phoenix was trying to pass the bathroom bill?
Oh, sure,
and,
of course. We covered
right,
it many
and MSNBC
times.
Had Mason Davis, of the executive director of the Trans Law Center, on with some right-wing guy, I think, from the ADF, the right-wing legal justice institute. Not the Pacific Justice Institute, but the other one that does a lot of these cases. I think mm-hmm. Mason did a superb job. I've seen him on MSNBC before speaking about these issues. He's good when he does that. But when you juxtapose him with somebody from the right who's really completely off the wall, that Ben Ferguson was telling the audience and was telling Piers Morgan what doctors think, and he was completely wrong. And he was doing it in such a shrill manner that it made us look better. So sometimes, you know, you can't create foils like this. You just have to grab them when they come up. I know it was offensive to people. It's hard to listen to it. Believe me, I've been out there in the public. I have to put up with this stuff all the time. And I'm getting a lot of hostility from some of my erstwhile gay friends because, you know, they think that I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. They're not looking at this from a democratic perspective. They're looking at it from a very, very personal perspective. I understand.
You're like, you're going after the gay guy.
Well, no, I'm not going after the gay guy. I'm going after their gay guy.
Yeah,
and I understand that, and I respect it. And it's fair to say, and I honor Rich for this, his race as the first openly gay candidate in Maryland made my first race and second and third race possible. I honor him for that. I would appreciate it if he would embrace that honor, because he really should. This is what it's like when you break through and you're the first. I've been smashing my head against the reinforced glass ceiling. This is now my third campaign. It's not easy. There's still a lot of prejudice out there. There are a lot of people who, if they're not prejudiced or dismissive, don't want to have to deal with people like me. I get that. It takes a lot of effort. It's not about gay. It's not about him. It all just happens to be what it is. But people are people, and politics can get very personal, and so people get very upset about it. I think that will fade, and we will have a fair and free-flowing, you know, discussion about the issues, and the end result will be based on that, because I believe that's what our neighbors want to talk about. But I can understand why the LGBT community would find this very entertaining. And I think that's the same problem we have with Janet and Laverne and the rest. I would also like to see, and I would encourage you to be in the avant-garde. We have our celebrities. America is a celebrity culture. Laverne's an actress, so she's part of that celebrity culture. Janet's a little different because she's an editor. But we need to get a far broader range of people out there, because that's the only way that we're going to normalize these conversations. And these problems won't come up again, right? So I would love to see you interview, for instance, Aaron DeVore.
I don't know Aaron DeVore. You know, I will say this though, and we got to, unfortunately, we got to wrap up because we are pretty much out of time. We're running over time, but that's okay.
Well, let me throw another one. I've tried to get. There are a lot of people who are really remarkable trans people that you can bring on and introduce America to these people, and we can move the conversation forward.
I mean, I have tried to get Laverne Cox, and I have tried to get Chaz Bono, and I've contacted their publicist, and they all send me back very terse letters that go, you know, Miss Cox is much too busy, which, you know,
yeah,
and translated
Becky,
with
the
unspoken
parties
to bother with the likes of you, kind of thing, you know.
Right. But call Martine Rothblatt, call Lynn Conway, call these other women who aren't on MSNBC and CNN, you know, get a broad cross section of the community, people who have other professional skills out there, you know, broaden America's sense of what trans people are really like, what Janet's trying to get across. We are far more than our genitals. We are far more than our bodies. We are far more than our hormones. We have lives. We have families. We have children. We have parents. We have careers. Lynn Conway is probably one of the most important American inventors in history who happens to be trans. Not enough people are talking about her. Martine Rothblatt, who created satellite radio. Remarkable Renaissance woman. I don't see anybody talking about her except in the business section when the profits of United Therapeutics are posted. You know, you have Jenny Pritzker. You have Aaron DeVore, who has basically made a home at University of Victoria in British Columbia for the Global Trans Archives. You know, these are people who are doing really, really good stuff for the world, and America and the rest of the globe needs to know about who they are. And you can reach out to them and not go through a publicist because they don't have a publicist. it's less of a problem. You just need an email. That's all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Dana, I want to say thank you so much. You know, we're out of time. We've run over time, which is okay.
Okay.
But I want to thank you so much. I hope you'll come on again as the campaign goes on, because we want to keep track of this, because this is such an important story for the community, for the whole community. Because let's be honest, you are leading the charge on one front for trans people here. And I think it's important that we make sure that you know, we keep track and that we generate as much support for your run as we can. And I know that you have a campaign website, don't you?
Yes, it's been my website for many years now. It's just danabyer.com.
Okay. And can folks donate to your campaign there?
Yes, they can. They can contribute on that website. There's a donate button.
Absolutely. Well, I hope people who can and who are motivated absolutely will, because I think we need to support not only trans candidates, but the good ones, which you certainly are.
I appreciate
and,
that.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking
You're
to us.
You're very welcome. We'll I look forward to
talk to
next
you
time.
Soon.
Bye-bye, Becky.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, and that was, of course, Dr. Dana Byers, Maryland Senate candidate. This is very exciting. We're going to have her on again soon to keep up on this. We are going to go to a slightly overdue break. We will catch you in about 5. Thanks for sticking around. And wow, well, Dr. Dana Byer, as always, a great guest, a friend of the show, good person. And you know, I frankly, you know, if my endorsement means anything to you, I mean, you know, I'm me, you know, so take it for whatever it's worth. But if my endorsement means anything to you, I've known Dana for years. She's a great lady. She's super duper smart. She's extremely well qualified. She's extremely well. I mean, if I'm going to vote for any trans person, she's the kind of trans person I'd like to be able to vote for, because she's somebody who I would never worry about. Is she qualified? Is she experienced enough? Is she going to be concerned with the issues I care about, not just as a trans person, but as a constituent, if I were living in her area? You know, I mean, that's the kind of, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'll use this as a jump off. I live in a district in New Jersey, in central New Jersey, which most of you know. I live near Rutgers University. I live about 5 miles away from one of those big luxury high-rises that Chris Christie shelled out, what was it, $4 million out of the Sandy Fund to help fund. After the mayor of New Brunswick, New Jersey, 2 weeks later, gave him an endorsement. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It is the way politics works out here. So I live in a district, and my congressman is somebody you may be familiar with, Congressman Rush Holt. He's a Democrat, he's 12th District of New Jersey. Congressman Holt is the kind of guy where I can always vote for him with a clear conscience, and I never have to worry, I never have to track him, I never have to worry about what his vote is on certain things, because he is such a reliable progressive. I know that he gets it. And why do I know that he gets it? For two reasons. Number one, because I've seen how he voted. He was one of the seven Democrats back in 2007 who refused to vote for an Employment Non-Discrimination Act that did not include transgender protections. Stood up to his own party leadership and said no. That gives him big credit in my book. Okay? And here's the thing. I don't have to worry about what Congressman Holt is going to be voting for, because I trust Congressman Holt. And you know what? The reason I know him is because I know what his votes are, and I know him. I've met him. He knows. He knows. He sees me. He knows who I am. He knows what my issues are. I make it a point that my congressman knows who I am. You know, I mean, we've met in Washington. We've met out here in Jersey. He's a good guy. He's a reliable progressive. He's somebody I trust to represent my interests. That's the kind of person who I feel is what Dana Byer is like. I would never have to worry about where she is on my issues. I would never have to be less than confident that I was well represented. You know what I mean? I that kind of comfort is rare, I think, because so many of us live in areas where our congressional and state and local representatives don't reflect our values. I mean, let's not forget, there's still 33 states where it's legal to just show a trans woman the door just for being trans, where it's legal to refuse to rent her an apartment, where it's legal to say, get out, no trannies allowed in my restaurant or bar, where it's legal to say, we're not renting you a hotel room because you're trans, and the law says we don't have to. 33 states. Well, when you have 33 states like that, and you have a president who's unwilling to stand up and keep his promises that he's made to you, and that he's been lying about for the last 5 years, when you have a president with that lack of spine and that lack of commitment and that lack of trustworthiness, and you have a Democratic Party that likes to play bait and switch with your civil rights like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid did in 2009, when they spent all of 2008 telling us how they were going to pass ENDA if they got enough members of the House. And then the moment that they won, they turned around and said, ENDA? What ENDA? We don't know what you're talking about. We meant hate crimes. We meant don't ask, don't tell. Because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, maybe five criminals every 20 years get a few extra years tacked onto their sentences once somebody's already been murdered or crippled or something, because, you know, that's more important than making sure people can eat and have shelter. And, you know, I mean, because, you know, this is Washington logic. What makes us look good is better, is more important than what actually helps people live better lives. Why? Because it's not about what's best for Americans. It's about what's most convenient for the Democratic Party leadership and their coward of a president who refuses to stand up for justice, who talks a good show, plays a great... He's not a real progressive. He just plays one on TV. You know what I mean? Just like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and all these guys who tell you, yeah, we're fighting for you. Could you hand us some more money first, though? Yeah. You know, I say this all the time. If Democrats put one-tenth of the effort into doing for us that they do and asking us to do for them, Enda, we would be celebrating, we're getting ready to celebrate the fifth anniversary of Enda's passage. Instead of wondering, gee, are we ever going to see this bill pass in our lifetimes? Okay? So when a Democrat comes to you, especially somebody like Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid, people who have the control, people who can make things happen. And they come to you this year, in this election year, and they say, you can trust us. We're fighting for you. Tell them to go fuck themselves. Tell them to come back and ask you for money when they've gotten off their ass. You want from me? You first, motherfucker. We're sick of waiting. 40 years is long enough. Long enough. Yeah, it was nice to see you take a vote in the Senate in November. You want to impress me? That vote should have been 5 years ago. You want to impress me? Okay, vote's over. Boehner said no. Where's Nancy Pelosi? Oh, wait, they're talking about immigration now. Oh, no. Enda? What Enda? No. We meant immigration. It's always the same little game with these people. They want you to think that they're focusing on Enda because they know, well, you know, marriage is off the table at the federal level. They need to generate cash. They have to sell you. They have to market you. They have to figure out new and different ways to separate you from your money. So, what are we going to do? Well, let's go back to the old workplace rights carrot to dangle out in front of our community, in front of desperate, economically depressed people who are scraping by, some of whom are hungry and homeless, and say, yeah, just send us another pile of money and we'll cover you this time. Really, we will. Just like they did last time, and the time before that, and the time before that, and the time before that, and the time before that. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think it's time that we say, you know what? No, you want our support, you first. We lined up behind you in 2008, and you fucked us over. Without a second thought, without a word of apology, without a word of explanation, that's what you want us to vote for? Go fuck yourself. You want my vote? You want my money? You better do something to earn it, or you can kiss my ass. I'm done giving money and support to people who won't stand up. I'm done with it. I've been doing it for 5 years. Okay, now granted, I don't give a, I don't donate cash because, well, I don't have it. But support? What do I have? I have exposure. I can talk about politicians on my show. I can write about them. I can tell my friends to vote for them. Well, I'd like to think that I have a little bit of influence, maybe not a lot, but I'd like to think that, you know, here and there, I make some impact. So that's how I generate support. I mean, somebody like Dana, I fully support. I will do anything in my power to help her succeed because I think that a trans woman in the Maryland Senate, or frankly in any state legislature or any elected position, is a good thing as long as that person is qualified and good on the issues. Because I don't think, I think we have to be careful. And I think because we've been caught like this before, okay, I think we have to be very careful to say it's not just enough for a candidate to be trans. They have to be trans and good. They have to be trans and qualified. They have to be trans and on the right side of the issues. That's when you have a quality trans candidate. I don't care if somebody is bisexual like Kyrsten Sinema when she sells out the community. Okay? Why do I give a shit that she's bi? She's the enemy. She sold us out. She sold out our community. She came to us for support when she tried to get elected. And once she was in office, she sold us out on the altar of political convenience for herself. That's not a valid candidate. That's not somebody the community should get behind. Anybody who donates to that traitor should be... Let her go appeal to her corporatist conservative friends and see how much money she gets from them. Let her go beg for scraps from the Republicans, because that's what she deserves. She's a traitor and she doesn't deserve our support. And it's disappointing because, you know, you would hope that any LGBT person who gets elected is going to be on our side and is going to be a force for good. But obviously, some people care more about personal politics and personal advantage. You know, like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Harry Reid and, you know, I mean, I would love somebody to prove me wrong. But you know what? The easiest way to prove me wrong would be to do something. Where's Nancy Pelosi? We've got an end to this. It's now passed the Senate. Why isn't she demanding a vote? Well, we heard her making excuses this summer at Netroots Nation. I was there. I was in the room. Oh, yeah. Well, people floated the idea of a discharge petition, which basically you get a majority of the House to sign on to it, and you can get a bill brought up for a vote that the speaker doesn't want. She poo-pooed that idea. It was like every time somebody said, hey, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but basically every time somebody threw out something and said, hey, Nancy, how about trying this? Oh, no, 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 that would never work. Oh, no, 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 we're not going to do that. Oh, no, no, no. There's always an excuse from Nancy Pelosi. Oh, no, 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 no. We're not going to do that because it's easier for us to just do nothing. You see, because that's the problem. Nancy Pelosi is not a leader. Nancy Pelosi is a security guard for the Democratic Party's image. What she cares about is making things easy on congressional Democrats, not making things better for Americans. That's the difference. Why did she support gay marriage? Because it meant a lot of money for the Democratic Party. Because it meant piles of cash from the Human Rights Campaign and other organizations and the gay donors. That's why she supported that. You know what? If there was no money in it, you would have never heard a word about that. I mean, just watch the speeches from the 2012 Democratic National Committee Convention. Watch them. Count how many times you see a major speaker use the words ENDA or workplace rights. Spoiler alert, the answer is zero. But you know what? Every single one of them, even though there is no federal control of marriage at the federal level, it's a state issue. The one thing on LGBT rights that Barack Obama and Mitt Romney agreed on, it's a state issue. But yet everybody had to say how much they support gay marriage of Obama and Clinton and this one and that one. Not one of them mentioned our jobs. Okay? You don't need to take my word for it. Go to the videotape and watch it for yourself. These people don't give a shit whether we live or die. They only care about our money. That's all they care about. If they were serious about protecting our rights rather than using it as a commercial to draw our money and support, Nancy Pelosi would be out there now stumping to get a vote. She would be out there calling Boehner out on it. She would. But the reality is, that's not her goal. Her goal is to maximize campaign cash profits for the Democrats going into the 2014 election. Well, if you do something to get ENDA passed into law, well, then that's going to cut into your money stream, isn't it? So all of a sudden, once again, just like we saw in 2009, we saw the same exact thing in 2013. The minute the vote is over, the minute the attention is over, the minute that passes, poof, gone. Oh, let's pivot onto something else. Oh, what were we talking about? ENDA? No. What we really meant was immigration. Yeah. Because, you know, that's where the money and the votes are, after all. All right, it is time for our final break. We have got, interesting name, Vaginal Davis with her group Technova, Mama's Not Dead. Okay, we will be back. It's a long song, so we will catch you in a little while. See you then. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. Man, oh man, we have had a great show tonight. Dana Byer, talking about Janet Mock, who, in case I haven't said it enough, I think is amazing. I love her. I think she's awesome. And you know what? I've said this before. I mentioned this a little bit when Dana was on. You know, I'm under no illusions here. I mean, I'm a little nothing show here. I'm on the internet. I'm no big shot. I mean, I like to think that, you know, the community knows who I am and appreciates my work, and that's great. But you know what? I'm well aware that I'm not Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes. I'm not, you know, I don't work for a major network. You know, I can't offer thousands and thousands of listeners. I have a little show with a hopefully loyal and relatively small audience, a lot of people who listen in after the fact on the podcast, and I know that. And I know that, you know, going on a show like mine is not going to be as much, it's not going to reach as many ears as, you know, going on Maddow or going on MSNBC or CNN or whatever. And so when somebody like Janet Mock, who is really an emerging star, somebody who does appear on MSNBC and is into that tier of media, but still is willing to take the time to come on a little show like mine and talk to the community hosted by a community member, four members of the community and our allies, because I hope you're out there, allies. You know, we love you, too. Okay, this isn't just for us, it's for you too. You know, somebody like, I can't tell you how I appreciate that. Because, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and it still disheartens me a little bit when I see somebody like Laverne Cox, who I think is great, and I've said this a number of times, I think she's awesome, and she made this great speech at Creating Change, in which she talked about transmedia, gave a shout-out to transmedia, we know you're out there, we love you, blah, blah, blah. But yet, you know, it's like, you know, what she says in front of a TV camera, which sounds wonderful and great and all the right things, but then when you actually say, okay, well, you know, hi, I'm transmedia, come and talk to us, and, well, you know, I get little emails back from her publicist that said Ms. Cox is much too busy, you know. And so it's like a double standard. You know, she'll come out and tell us how much she loves her and supports and blah, 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 blah. But then when, you know, we ask you to, you know, take 10 minutes and come and talk to us, well, then she can't be bothered. And it's like, you know, I want to avoid putting this all on Laverne Cox's shoulders, because I know that it's a decision that's most likely made by her publicist. But you know what? I keep coming back to the same fact. And again, not a dig against Laverne Cox per se, but they work for you. They work for her. She is the employer. And if she has a problem with the way that they are handling her press contacts, then it is incumbent upon her as the employer to do something about that. So it's easy for Laverne Cox to go out and say, well, you know, and she hasn't, because she's never addressed this as far as I know, to say, well, that's not how I feel. Well, if you don't feel that way, then, well, why aren't you doing something about it? Why aren't you changing it? Why aren't you being more accessible? Why aren't you, you know, and so it's disappointing. I got the same kind of reaction with Chaz Bono. Everybody's defining him as an activist. You know, but they'll he'll go on and he'll talk to Michelangelo Signorelli and he'll talk to Don Lemon. Like, you know, he'll sit down at a panel discussion with Don Lemon, who's asking him idiotic questions about what it feels like to shave. But he's got no time for, you know, to actually talk on a non-commercial community radio show. And you know what? I mean, honestly, I think it stinks. I really do. I think it stinks. I mean, you know, and there may be perfectly good reasons for it. They may legitimately be too busy to be bothered. But I think it stinks. I think if you're going to say you support the community and you support the media, then when the community comes to you and says, you know, can we have 10 minutes of your time? You should offer that. Nobody's asking her to come out and get on a plane and drive somewhere. I'm asking her to pick up the phone for 10 minutes. That's all. I didn't think it was too much to ask, but apparently her publicist is, you know, I don't know what we don't represent enough viewers for Orange is the New Black, or, you know, we didn't represent enough potential buyers for Chaz Bono's new book, or, you know, I mean, that's really what these people are thinking in terms of, you know, oh, we don't give a shit that this person has publicly presented themselves as an advocate for your own community. What we care about is where's the most money to be made. And again, I am not trying to place that directly on Chaz Bono or Laverne Cox's shoulders. But again, these people work for Chaz and Laverne. If they have a problem with the way they are handling their press contacts, then it is incumbent upon them as the person who is the employer to do something about it. I can't do anything about it, but they can. So the fact that that's not the case, okay, the fact that I can't get through, that they're not interested, well, you know, but yet when I contacted Janet, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Janet is an extremely busy lady. It took us about 8 months to put that interview together, to schedule her. And you know what? That's totally fine. I get that these people are busy. I worked with her. I said, you tell me when you are free and I will clear the schedule for you. If I remember correctly, I think I even moved a couple of guests around to give her the date that she was free, because I wanted her on and I was willing to do that. And the people who I was moving around were understanding, they were personal friends. And I said, you know, could you do me a favor? This is, you know, a special situation. I would appreciate it. And you know, people who are contacts and friends and stuff are good people and are understanding and cool and all that stuff. You know, originally, as I remember, we had Will Kohler on the same night, and originally he was supposed to be on at 7:30. We moved him to 8 o'clock so that we could have Janet on at the first hour. And she was wonderful, you know? And what did we have, 15, 20 minutes with her? I mean, she was generous with her time. She was a terrific guest. And, you know, come on. I mean, particularly Laverne Cox, okay? Because Chaz Bono, I mean, he says he's an activist, but I don't see him doing much activating, to be honest with you. Seems like he's just kind of faded into the... After Dancing with the Stars, he's just kind of, like, vanished into the woodwork somewhere. I don't know. Maybe he's working on his next book or something. I don't know. But then, you know, I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to me as a host, as somebody who wants to, as I was saying, we were talking with Dana... I don't want to present these people. I don't want to ask Chaz Bono what it feels like to shave. I want to ask Chaz Bono about Chaz Bono. I want to ask, well, what kind of, you know, okay, you're a guy. What kind of guy are you? What are you doing with your life? What should the transgender community know about you? What do you want us to know about you? Same thing with Laverne. You're a rising star on this new show. It's terrific. A lot of people love it. You come on, you know, introduce yourself. Not just come on a show. Don't, you know, it's easy to get interviewed by these straight people because they all ask the same questions. When did you know? And all the, you know, you guys aren't going to get a transgender 101 on this show. Because you guys out there who listen to this, you are Transgender 101. I want to talk about who these people are, not what they are, like Piers Morgan. Okay? And you know, he's so fucking arrogant. That's the other thing that annoys me about Piers Morgan. Oh, I'm a supporter. I'm a this, I'm a that. Well, if you're really a supporter, then why are you insulting? If you are really a supporter... then you also have to be a respecter. And how do you come to the logic that referring to any woman as a man, former or otherwise, is respectful? Apparently, he felt, well, it's a trans woman, so therefore it's okay. Well, guess what? No, it isn't okay. It's just as rude, just as demeaning, and just as disrespectful as if you had said it to a woman who was born female. And that is what these people do not get. And you know what? He felt so offended because he was attacked and vilified. And who's attacked? Really? When you call a trans woman a man, that is an attack. It is emotional battery. It is demeaning. It is offensive. And it is wrong. End of story. End of story. Dead stop. There is no excuse for misgendering a trans woman. Now, if a trans woman came on your show and volunteered that, well, I was a man, but I'm now a woman, well, then she is self-identifying herself, and she has a right to do that. But that's not what happened here. Janet never used those words. Identity was imposed on her without her consent by Piers Morgan and his staff. That is wrong. It is misinformation. It is disparaging. It is disrespectful. And he should have expected to get called out on it because it was just rude and it was a slap in the face to every trans woman paying attention. And that's what this guy doesn't get. That's what he doesn't get. And you know what? I can be... how to put this? I could be a little tolerant. I could be a little understanding. To a point. The first episode, the first appearance, you know, if Janet had done what she did and say, hey, you know, this isn't fair, and you know what, you're right, I shouldn't have done it, I'm sorry, I apologize, it would have been over. Okay, that whole thing would have just petered out, because you know what, that's what people were looking for. Oh shit, I screwed up, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend. Because that's the point. It doesn't matter whether Piers Morgan thinks we should be offended. All that matters, if you are a real transgender supporter, if you are truly someone who believes in transgender equality, then just the fact that Janet was offended and the fact that these women were offended, regardless of whether you agree with the reasons for their offense, the fact is they were offended. But you felt that your definition of who Janet is and whether or not she should be offended was more important than her feelings. So in other words, as far as I can see from my perspective behind this microphone, this is an example of a host mistreating and disrespecting a guest in his on-air home. He is the one who acted shamefully here. Okay, and then his response when people started calling him out on it, oh, gee, was your ego bruised, Piers? You know what? If you're that thin-skinned, dude, get the fuck out of this business because it ain't for you. Go back to England and live off your millions very quietly in some, you know, Sherwood Forest or somewhere. You know, I mean, honestly, okay? If you can't take a little criticism, if you can't be taken for, you know, being called out when you make a mistake publicly, then, dude, you are in the wrong business. Just get out. Go live on your millions. You know, go back to England. Go fade from the collective, consciousness of cultural consciousness, because you're not cut out for this. And I don't believe that. I think you're taking offense. I think you're probably got a much thicker skin than you're letting on, because you wouldn't have gotten as far in this business as you have unless you did. I mean, honestly, compared to my show is you know, this guy has more a bigger audience in one show than I probably have in a year. Okay, and you know what? I take plenty of crap too. But I've learned to let it brush off me. Okay? I get called out all the time. And that's okay. Because you know why? It tells me people are paying attention. And that's okay. Somebody calls me out. Unless they're really an asshole and they're just a jerk and not really making a valid argument. If they're making a credible argument, I'll say, hey, come on the show. Call in the show next week. Of course, they never do. But I challenge people to do that all the time. Because, you know, if you believe in what you say, if you have an honestly held opinion, you believe I'm in the wrong, you want to challenge me on something, that's what our phone line is for. And I'll give it to you. We still have a few minutes left. What do we got? Like 14 minutes left or something. So what the hell is our phone number? Oh, it is 928-277-4921. So you can give us a call. Give us a call. You know, but that's, you know, that's what it is. You know, somebody has to sit down with Piers Morgan, maybe Janet Mock over a cup of coffee like she suggested on her show. And you know, he's got to understand. He's got to be made to understand, just like these other folks got to be made to understand. It doesn't matter whether Piers Morgan thinks that we take offense legitimately to being called, referred to as men. It doesn't matter whether he thinks it's valid or not. Because if you're a true trans ally, if you're a true trans supporter, just the fact that you offended intentionally or not, is enough. You made a mistake. You offended. You hurt somebody. Inadvertently, perhaps, but you did. That requires an apology and a promise not to do it again. It's not really that much to ask, Mr. Morgan, Mr. Big Shot mainstream television host. It's really not that much to ask that you own up to your own lack of education on transgender people, and transgender women specifically, that you understand that you have some research to do before your next interview with a trans person, and learn from the experience and become a better, more well-informed host as a result of it. Because you see, we talk about education a lot, but education has two components. You need a teacher and you need a willing student. You can't have somebody who's just willing to teach unless you have somebody who's willing to learn. And when Piers Morgan has this arrogant, self-centered attitude of, I am an ally, I am a friend, I support everything. Well, if you support them, then you have to, if you support us, then you have to respect us. And calling a woman a man, any woman, any woman a man, former or otherwise, yes, I'm saying it again, is offensive, wrong, and hurtful. It doesn't matter if you think it's technically accurate. It's hurtful. It's demeaning. You insulted your guest live on the air in front of millions of people. Intentionally or not, Mr. Morgan, don't you think that at least deserves an acknowledgement and an apology and an effort on your part to see that it doesn't happen again? Are you really that petty, sir, that you can't offer us that much? Really? Because if that's the case, Mr. Morgan, then you should expect to hear more from us. Because then you reveal yourself, just like so many of your fellow media people have. As not an ally, but an exploiter. As somebody who wants to have the trans person on, not because you want to introduce them as a person, but because you want to sensationalize, because you want to promote the titillating aspect of transgender life, because you want to slake your viewers' prurient interests rather than their intellectual ones. Because you want to turn Janet and others like her into objects of curiosity and derision instead of respected and welcomed guests and persons. There's a reason they call them guests, sir. And you were a bad host. Bad, awful, disrespectful. There is no other way to look at it. And whether you think so or not is really irrelevant. Because if you're a true supporter, if you truly care, if you truly believe that transgender people should be treated as equals, how about you start modeling that behavior yourself? How about you put it on display on your media platform for all to see? You had that opportunity and you did exactly the opposite. And when people called you out on it, you acted like you were the injured party. Are you really that arrogant, Mr. Morgan? Really? Are you really that detached from the way regular people live? You know, the people who watch you every night? Who are not famous millionaire television stars? The people who go home and have to worry about things like putting food on the table? The people who may or may not be employed that week? May have just been fired from a job for being transgender? Or maybe just had a really lousy day? Maybe they ran into somebody like you and were called a man. Yeah. Think about how that would make you feel. If somebody referred to you, Mr. Morgan, as a woman. If somebody considered you publicly less than masculine. If somebody questioned your male gender identity on the air, how would you feel? Would you think it was legitimate? And if not, regardless of Janet's lived history, if that would make you feel offended and attacked, why would you think that Janet would react any differently? I think you need a little bit of introspection, Mr. Morgan. I think you need to take a step back, sir. Look at the bigger picture. Look at the minority group that you are confronting here. These are not wealthy gay people in major metropolitan areas having deck parties and living the high life. This is a very different community than that, sir. We are not all gay. Most of us, well, I don't know about most of us, but a lot of us live below the poverty line. Yeah. Well, because you see, in 33 states, it's legal to deny us work or an apartment just because we're transgender. States like the one you broadcast from, New York, well, you can't discriminate against gay people there. Trans people, it's still open season for us. Yeah, it's true. We have a law in New York. Fat lot of good it does us. We can't even change our birth certificates because New York City has one of the most draconian anti-transgender laws in the country, which is so draconian and so bigoted, it's probably in violation of the HIPAA laws, the Health Information Privacy Protection Act. But, of course, nobody in New York City government actually gives a shit, so it's remained on the books that way, despite having a non-discrimination law technically on the books since 2002. But, of course, laws like that only work when people give a shit. Laws like that only work when governments seek to impose them and when people who are cultural figures don't act like idiots and hurl disrespect towards these people. You have something, Mr. Morgan, that people like me would kill for. A major mainstream media platform to speak your views. I've been looking to break in to do that for over a decade now. And I'd be a liar if I said I didn't envy your position, that if I had an opportunity, I would go for it in a heartbeat to sit in your chair. I make no bones about it. And I don't mean you personally. I mean any mainstream media host chair. You know, so I can kind of appreciate your position because I want to be in your position someday. And maybe I will, and maybe I won't. That's okay. But the reality is you have a platform that somebody like myself would kill for. It has such great influence. And when we see you misuse it in this way and misuse it mainly because of ignorance, because you didn't do your homework like you should have, because you didn't bother to learn what is the appropriate way to interview a transgender person. And you know what? It's very easy to find out. This is not rocket science. You could call up GLAAD. You could, hell, drop me an email. Drop anyone. All right. Anyway, okay, we've gone on long enough about this, and we are, what do you know, God damn it, we're out of time. So I want to say thank you to Dr. Dana Beyer. She was awesome. I want to say thank you to Mr. Mike, as always, for twisting my knob so I can twist yours. And I, of course, the amazing Janet Mock. And we will get into this, all this, hopefully next week. We will catch you all then. Have a good night, everybody.